Blog Talk Radio.
I can't believe it. It's that time again. We're actually doing a show today. And I'm
excited. It's great.
And I've got Evie Sands again as my guest host. And Evie, it's great to talk to you and gearing up for the holidays. Can you believe this? We're gearing up for Thanksgiving already.
That
cannot
be true. Is it really?
I know. And I just had celebrated I went to two weddings. And then I was gearing up for my own birthday party, which I invited, and I had over 200 people at my birthday party.
Wow.
And you would have liked it. We had a few great jams this year.
Yes, I would have been there for sure if I hadn't been 3,000 miles away.
I know. I mean,
I actually had a gig the same night, so.
Oh, isn't that funny? I hope your gig was fun like ours was in our place, because I tell you, this year so many people came out to jam. I had Simon Kirk, who flew in straight from off his tour and flew in and wanted to be at the party, and he jammed and he sang. You know, people don't know who Simon Kirk. He's, he's the drummer from Bad Company. And
mm-hmm.
then, just the other week, last week, he was also honored at the Rockers on Broadway, which is a fundraising event, a rock legend.
Did you go to that?
Yes, I was there. It was fabulous. And Pete Townsend showed up.
Was that Pete Townsend?
That was Pete Townsend that showed up for this. And he he did a whole show and jammed as well and did some songs. And then, who else was at my thing? Oh, this guy named Paul Schaefer showed up.
I've
fabulous.
Never heard of him.
I know, right? And it was, everybody couldn't believe it. So Paul got up and he jammed with this girl who I'm going to go see tomorrow night. He actually backed her, named Kirsten Maxwell.
Mm-hmm.
She is fabulous. She's beautiful, has a silky voice. She's a singer-songwriter. She's in Nashville. And tomorrow she's at the Cutting Room. And anybody, can see her. She's fabulous. She really is.
Mm.
And then we also, another girl that got up and did a jam named Grace Kelly. I mean, can you imagine? And she's Korean. She's a jazz. She's a saxophone player, and she's Korean, and she's so jazz. I mean, it's amazing. She is fabulous, and Paul
got
up
great,
there.
Huh?
And another friend of mine named Richie Morales, who's from Spyro Gyra and played
mm-hmm.
with the Brecker Brothers back in the day, and he was the drummer for it. I mean, he was amazing. He was amazing to play with her, because jazz is not that easy in that drumming, and that you have to understand
right.
it. It's not rock and roll,
right?
And it was a good night. Like I said, I had over 200 people at the party. It was one of those scenes.
That's overflow at the Cutting Room.
Absolutely, but I will just definitely tell you that. And I also had Vinnie Martell from the. From the Fudge, he came in, and he also jammed, too.
Oh,
so I had a number of people. But, I'm excited for today's guest that we have,
Me, too.
I mean, he's one of the few people that I can say that, he was at Apple. You know, everybody talks about the Beatles. He ran Apple, and it's great. He was there before I ever got there. But, he was there on the famous rooftop recording, and I've been up on the roof when I went to visit. So we get a chance to hear about the new book, The Roof, the Beatles concert. And welcome, Ken Mansfield.
Hi, Ken.
Are you there?
Glad to be here, May. Hi.
Yes.
Well,
and
we're glad to have you
back
on the show.
Yeah, we're glad to have you back. I mean, how long did it take you to write this book, this about the roof? I mean, the rooftop concert. They were the first.
This one actually took me about a year, and it's actually one of my quickest writing books I wrote. once I started, it just kind of happened. It was one of those pretty easy books to write because I wrote it very as a very personal thing. So, I wasn't caught up in facts because I had people like Mark Lewis and Robert Rodriguez and Bruce Spicer and stuff like that, you know, watching my back on the facts. So I could just, I was just free to really, really free to just say what it felt like to be up there and to be there in the beginnings of Apple and the,
right.
you know, what the whole thing was on a personal level. So that was fun. That was easy.
Yeah, Frida was just talking about my party. Frida came in to celebrate my birthday party with me. So she was just here. So I love Frida. I mean, Frida and I, you know, we go back. We have mutual friends and, you know, especially Lori McCaffrey. And, you know, she was the telephone operator at Apple that came down from Liverpool and then worked in London as well. And her voice was just golden. So we were just talking about that, but, you know, talking about this, the rooftop, because of, you're right, when you have those other three guys with their facts and there's really no thinking about it, but what I'm interested is how long did it take you to get that, whose idea and how long did it take to set up on this?
Well, I got a call, months before that from Mal Evans, and they've been planning on, they needed footage for the film. And that was one of the whole major concepts in the film is for them to get back together and do live footage for it. But there were crazy ideas. You've heard about them, like the Colosseum or Tunisia or, you know, just all these bizarre things. And Mal called me and said, hey, they want to think about setting up in a desert someplace. So they've asked me to go look at the Sahara Desert and wanted to know you would check out a desert, you know, in America, one of the American deserts, and what they want to do is just set up in the middle of this desert, and then every kid from the world can come and see them for free. So
this
and
is like
and
Burning Man
that'll,
before the Burning Man type of thing, and all these other concerts.
Yeah, this would have been Burning Man. I mean, everybody would have got burned up on that one. And the whole thing was to think how ridiculous. Can you imagine somebody underwriting that whole thing? Or as the final blow on that idea was pretty logical. How would you get that many porta potties out in the desert for like 500,000 kids or something? You know, so it was just. But the ideas were crazy. And in the book, I list about 20 of the ideas that were floating around. And so when we finally did it, I just happened to be in the offices working that week in London, out of the London office, and I heard a bunch of noise for like a day or two before. And what surprised me, you guys, is I was asked that long ago to help him with doing that, but nobody told me that we were going up on the roof that day. So, I mean, I was hearing the noise, and about 50 minutes before, Mal came over and said, come on, we're going up on the roof. And they just decided kind of last minute to finally do it, but they were prepared. They had, you know, built the boards on the roof because it wouldn't hold that many people, and there wasn't room for very many people up there. So there's only really about a dozen or so of us right in the immediate area. And I was about 4 feet from George, you know, and I was sitting with Yoko and Maureen and Chris O'Dell and just the four of us. We were the audience. We were the audience.
Was Peter Asher there at that time?
No. We were talking the other day, we were laughing because he was in London probably working out of my office, and I was in Apple, maybe using his office. I don't know.
Oh, that's so.
How about Mal? Mal up there?
Oh,
as well?
Mal. Oh, Mal.
They needed Mal.
Mal was everywhere.
Yeah.
Mal was never 3 feet away from a Beatle in one way or another.
Absolutely.
He was up and down. He's on
that's,
at the doorway.
That was down. I was going to say there's been also rumors. I mean, was Nat Weiss there too?
No.
You know.
No. You know as well as I do, if Nat Weiss is in a room, you know he's there, you know,
right.
And Nat was not there.
The wives. Why wasn't Linda there? Linda wasn't there, you said at one point, I think.
No, and we joke, we think Linda and Patty were probably off shopping someplace that day, you know. But I researched this in depth with the people who know and from all the photos and memory and stuff like that and all the authorities. And I can read you the list right now who was actually there on the roof.
Oh,
now,
let's hear
a lot
it.
Of pictures,
I'm curious
yeah, a
now.
Lot of, a lot of pictures, looked like there were more people because when the rooftops, when they shot the pictures of people on the other rooftops, it kind of almost looked like they were there. But there was about a 12 to 20 foot square foot space that people were actually in up there. So here we go.
Okay.
Most importantly, in a way, for me, was Alan Parsons.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He was a young 19-year-old pulling cables, making his bones. Anita Cass, who was Ron Cass's wife, Ron was the president of Apple.
Mm-hmm.
A kid called Billy Preston, who played some pretty good piano.
Oh, some kid. Yeah, I could see that. I think I like his piano playing.
And our mutual friend, Chris O'Dell. Dave Harries, who was a technical engineer. I didn't know Dave, but Dave was there. And then Ethan Russell is the guy who was the only
photographer
up there that day.
Sure.
Yeah, and Ethan was – it was so good because Ethan never got in the way, and he took, you know, all the photos up there that day. And then George – I'm doing these in alphabetical order. And then George Harrison, who was a Beatle. Jack Oliver, who was an Apple executive and ended up being the president at the very, very end. John Lennon, another musician.
Some guy named John Lennon,
And then a guy named Keith Slaughter, who was a techno engineer. And I didn't know Keith or Dave, but it was verified that they were up there by people who knew them. And then myself was and I classified myself and Chris O'Dell and Yoko and Maureen. We were audience members. We were the only people up there without a job that day. We're just sitting on the bench watching the show. And then you probably know or met Kevin Harrington, who was he was the Beatles equipment manager and the guy that was had the red
right,
hair.
Right, that drove them around. That's right.
And he was holding the notes for John, so because John couldn't remember the lyrics on one song. And then and then the film director Michael Lindsay Hogg.
Right.
And then another musician Paul McCartney was up there. Peter Brown, who was in the hierarchy, started with Brian Epstein, and that's how, you know, he was up there. And then Ringo, the drummer, and then Ron Cass, the president,
Cass.
And then a guy named Tony Richmond, who was the director of photography that day, that worked for Michael. And then Yoko. Alphabetically, those are the people who were there. And I mean, I've spent a lot of time on this, and that list changed and was updated off and on during the year I wrote this, constantly checking it out, finding new information.
Well, you know, I mean, that rooftop, if anybody's been, you know, I've been on that roof as you have, that roof is a postage stamp. You couldn't get that many people on there.
No, you couldn't.
So
if anybody says the board, it's very
difficult.
The floor they built up there, because it would have never held the weight, was either probably 12 by 12 or 12 by 20 or something like that. And then Peter Asher's office was directly below on the fifth floor.
And they had to
build up beams and the whole thing to make sure it didn't come crashing down on his office. You know,
oh, my God.
In case they did get too many people up there. So.
Well, you know, a couple of years later, and this is after you've gone, but I was in, we had celebrated, you know, they always had their Christmas parties and everything, and people woke up in various places. But the fire brigade came in and told everybody they had to leave because it was deemed unfit. You know, the place was unfit for the whole people. The whole place could have just come down and collapsed around everyone. And I was sitting there thinking, oh, my God, here we're all celebrating, and this whole roof could have, not just the roof, it was all the floors. It would have, we'd have all just gone. It was just amazing. And
you'd have probably ended up on the second floor or something.
I was thinking of that when they were saying that the next day when we came in and said, oh, how's everyone? They said, well, this building's been condemned, sort of. We can't go back in too well. You know, we've got to fix it. And I went, oh, my God.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about that. So I understand. So I could think about the roof with all the equipment and everything else. I actually have photos of me sitting on at the roof with Laurie because I wanted to see what the roof looked like. And like I said, it's a postage stamp up there. So it was great. Well, this is it's an exciting. The Beatles always came up with something unique, and so they were the first of many things, whether it be a rooftop, whether it been Bangladesh, whether it was always something. They were ahead of their time. You know, they definitely was. Yeah. So
just dawned on me the other day. It's funny you're mentioning that because they always came up with a new concept album, and I thought, well, gosh, they didn't do it this time. They just did this, and I was like, wait a minute, they did. They did a different concept album. They did the roof thing, you know, something totally different than they'd ever done before. So, like, once again, they came up with something we weren't expecting.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you think about the Beatles, and because you and I are both coming from that that part of the world with them, they were the only band, you know, when you think about it, that when an album came out, they went to the next level. You can never tell that it was them. They always came up with something different to make it.
Yeah.
You could see the build-up, as opposed to certain bands when you hear it, you go, oh, I know it's the Eagles, or I know it's a hole in the... You could hear the sound. But they always took it to another level to create something different, whether it be to, like I said, like the White Album. It took them into... you know, when you know, with all that transcendental stuff and you know, psychedelic, and you know, went into a whole other realm with them all the time. So it's a shame. I would like to know what they would have been like, all four of them, at this point in time.
Oh yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah.
Yes.
But they were really at that point. That was another point in time. But this, to me. The White Album and then this really announced the fact that they were going to be individuals from then on. Because the White Album is really, to me, has always sounded like just individual guys in the band putting an album, making an album that way. And so when they did this too, it was a time for them to become individuals and start doing their own stuff. You know, especially George, I think. George really needed to break out. And people have said, well, why didn't George have any songs on the roof? And I think George didn't push for it. I think he's fine, you know. If they want to overlook my material, I'll just make my own album. I'll save my good stuff for myself, you know.
No, I really agree
think
with you about
kind,
that.
I
that
kind of think that's
George.
What happened. Yeah.
I agree about that. Yeah. No, I definitely agree about the thought process about George, because that's definitely his thing. And, you know, John used to say to me all the time, he says, George is like my kid brother. And, you know, he was overshadowed by two very strong forces in that band. He was the youngest one. And but he definitely looked up to John. There was no two ways about it. I mean, they hadn't seen each other. And I just remember it was, someone reminded me where I told the story, you know, where they just looked at one another. And George said, where were you when I needed you? You know, so
no.
I'm just sitting there going, oh, boy, you know, here it comes. But they made up, and it was wonderful in that sense. So when I was around to see, all four guys really were intact. You know, I was glad that John was now friendly with all four with all the other three, so that it was a point that even John said to me, he goes, you know, I wouldn't mind getting together with the other three to do something.
Yeah.
So it was.
Well, they had quite a history.
Yeah, and it was perfect because now they weren't obligated, but they were now wanting, they could do it because they want to do it, as opposed to being an obligation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
well, think,
you know,
think of the history they had. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
the
history their
history, together.
What they experienced together was
kind
of like no other, and forever bonded them as brothers, even through whatever things and machinations went on, but what you were just saying, May, in the end, there was a bond, I think, between all of them that never really could ever be broken.
That's true.
Oh,
and here's the main thing I took away from the roof is when they were out there, before they broke up on the roof, walked up on the roof that day, there was a lot of dissension. And I mean, they actually almost didn't come up there that day. But they, when they started playing, a moment I remember most of all is when it was either John looked over at Paul or Paul looked over at John, and they had this look at each other. They said, yeah, this is us. Well, here we are. This is what we do. We're a good band. We play together. We've grown up together. We've worked together. We've suffered together. You know,
and this is us. This is the real us. And they had a good time that day. You could tell. They just
I'm
had
just
a good
glad.
Time.
I'm just glad yeah. because, well, you can see it at the end when I think John even said something about, you know, besides passing the audition, but I think he also said something to Maureen, too. I think he said something, hey, Mo, what do you think, or something like that.
Yeah,
if I, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think because Mo comes from, you know, Maureen comes from Liverpool, so it's all that was that, the reference, if people don't realize it. You know, it was a good feeling because that's the one time you see them all just being,
yeah.
all politics aside, you could see that they
yeah.
were happy. And that,
well,
no, see,
you
I
know,
had
you
the
were,
pleasure
it was
of,
about the music. So when, as you, and then both of you were saying, and Ken, that once the music started, that's really what they were all about always. And the synergy of them together, just the joy of playing together, was more transcendent than anything else. And for those moments, it is very special. That's what was going on.
I just think...
So I had the pleasure of... go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you're okay. You had the pleasure of...
No, I mean, just working with all four of them, you know, right towards the end, because we were having the meetings, we're all in a small room together, and they were a band doing business then, and they exchanged ideas, and I really got to see how they thought together and their thought processes and how they expressed things was really good when we were just putting together Apple Records. So
mm-hmm.
I had that pleasure. I worked with them live as a band back in L.A., but that was just really sitting down with them as a group, because usually I didn't get to see them as four people at one time. It was always individually, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That is true.
So,
I mean, how
so that's
long did
pretty
you,
great because that's a different, not the music itself, but the creative process of just working together and bouncing ideas off each other. And
yeah.
So, yeah, very, very special.
How long did you actually work with the company at this, you know, when you were at Apple,
well,
when you find with them?
Yeah. I worked with them when I was at Capitol Records. I was the head of promotion for the West Coast, so I worked with the band on their 65 and 66 tour, and we became
right.
friends because they had some time off, and they had me come up to the house and hang out, and we became friends too. And then I didn't hear from them for 2 years. And then when they decided to set up Apple, they needed somebody to New America, and so they sent for me to help them set up the label, and we did the launch in America. So then I worked with them at Apple for 2 years, and then Cass and myself and Peter Asher and Mike Connor, when everything was falling apart, we left and went to MGM together. So then George was in L.A. a lot, and I was their contact in America, so even after I left Apple, I was the guy they'd get in touch with. You know, if Paul wanted some sunglasses or Patty wanted to get some furniture from the MGM movies, and it just... things like that, you know, I was the guy they'd contact. And so then George was there a lot, and I would just do things with George because I guess he was used to, you know, me being there, even though I was now with MGM. And I took Ringo called when I was MGM to see if I could get him into the Elvis, yeah, hard to get him, Beatle, into a show, but if I could get him into the MGM show when Elvis made his comeback. And
mm-hmm.
That was the kind of way it was. And then Ringo lived there forever, and I represented him again in the 90s on an album project he had.
So
oh, just,
wow.
Yeah, time takes time. I put that thing together with Bruce Gurkell.
I was just going to say, yeah, with Bruce Gurkell, yeah, great guy.
Yeah.
He was my attorney for a while.
Me too.
As well. He was just,
me too.
He's a great guy, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he was an attorney
and
for everyone.
Harry was the one who put us together, like he did kind of with Ringo.
Yeah. Well, Harry.
Yeah.
Harry was
Harry.
Definitely. I saw a lot of Bruce. Yes.
Yeah.
It was it. People don't realize Harry was definitely a character.
You either loved Harry or you didn't like him. It was there was nothing in the middle with Harry.
Well,
Harry
you know,
was
you're right. I mean, it was funny because John and I watched him go into so many different directions, and you know, they always said, oh, he was John's, you know, that was John's best friend. I said, in actuality, he was really Ringo's best friend. Mm-hmm. And I would try to explain that. We were the new kids on the block and just happened to come in. And really it was Ringo who was more into it than us. But we were there to do an album. We happened, as I always said, you know, we're the new kids on the block, and Ringo had gone home to England, and then when he came back, we were all part of this group that, like, the traveling gypsies, you know, from one place to another.
Ringo and Harry and I were the Marauders of the Sunset Strip for a while, because I'd known Harry way back when, before he ever met anybody at the Beatles, and so we all had a history with each other. And so, you know, when by the time they were full-time LAers, or Ringo was, we already had, you know, 20 or 30 years background, you know, together. And the same with Harry. Cause,
mm-hmm.
So,
that's why I said we were the new kids. John and I were really more, we came in for a visit. And then John said, well, let's do an album, you know, because he had just finished doing Mind Games. And we were saying, all right. We're in L.A. Let's see. And, of course, we were doing an oldies, and we saw Phil Spector. And then that becomes a whole other story there. After Phil, you know, we weren't quite ready. It took us into the following year with different things. But a lot of people didn't realize we actually came back to New York. Everybody thought we lived in L.A. We didn't. We were only there for, you know, for our projects. And when we were doing the Pussycats album, that's where John's idea was to get everybody into one place. That's why we're all living together.
Were you in L.A.? Ringo had called me. I was producing Waylon Jennings, and Ringo is a big country fan. And so I just got back from Nashville producing an album on Waylon. And Ringo called me and said, hey, I hear you just got back. Can I have an advance listen to Waylon's new album? And he said, can you bring the tapes over today and let's listen to them? So I get there, and John's there. Now, John had showed up between the time Ringo invited me over and wanted to talk to Ringo about something personal or something. But I get there, and John's sitting on the couch, and he's real moody. And now I walk in, and I could tell John really wished that I wasn't there because he wanted to talk to Ringo. And so he's just kind of sitting there, and I had gone from being an personal invited guest to being an intruder almost.
Oh, dear.
John suffered through the music, and then I realized that it wasn't a hangout time because I didn't know if you were with him around that time.
I did. If you give me a year, I can tell you if I was or not.
Oh, gosh. Probably 75, 76. Yeah, 74.
I was with him in 74, and in 75 I wasn't. Late 75. So if it's by that point he had returned, you know, back to the Dakotas, I would say. So
yeah, well, he was in LA. He was in LA during what people have called the lost years or whatever they were, I guess.
Well,
that was during my time.
That was my time, though.
Okay.
Then I would have been there. So that's 74. Because we didn't, in 75, we were in and out of L.A. a lot. But we spent a lot of time doing the work there, and then we left. We left there in May, early May, and we came back. Because we were, like I said, people don't realize, we were flying in and out of New York. But every time we got together with Harry, it became another blowout on the, you know, that's what we were saying. The girlfriends didn't like it, you know, and everyone went out because it'd create havoc. Because I always used to say, you know, you can go out with Harry, he'll start the fight, but in the end, you're the one who gets caught up in it, that you didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
And it's true. Yeah. I mean, it's like he starts it, but you're the one with the black eye at the end of the day. And so I start to laugh. And but we didn't. We actually lived in New York. But like I said, everything that happened in L.A. becomes really a big thing. Everybody sort of remembers that. So if you were over the house, that meant you were over. And I could tell you the month is April of 1974.
Okay.
I can give you, that's how I said, I can get you down to the time frame. And if John was there, it's from April to the beginning, like the first week of May. And then we went back to New York. He went first, and then I went after. So that's the time frame with Ringo. See?
Anyway, I covered the book. Go ahead, E. What? What?
I'm sorry?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
I thought Edie said something.
No, I didn't.
Okay. Anyway, we're talking about personal things with the guys, and that's what is in this book a lot. It's really a personal insight to just things, personality things and things like you're talking about. I just want people to get a real feel for the band during this 2-year time period, which was a real important time in the band's life, because it was kind of when they were peaking with a lot of their creativity and with Apple Records and then the breakup. So that was kind of after the initial, when they just really just blew on the scene and blew everybody away. Then that was kind of the next big phase in their life was the Apple thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's true.
It was really a special time to be with them.
Absolutely. And that's why I could remember almost everything, because after that I remember what it was like to be at Apple, because it was buzzing constantly. I remember just being there it was chaos and wonderful at the same time. And being in the offices, and it was no other place. It was just constantly buzzing. Yeah. Everybody can go in there, and this person, that person, you saw this. And downstairs, they were just finishing up the studio that they were creating downstairs. It was just a magical time. I mean, I used to go in there and talk to Bernard Brown and all these other people, for publishing and whatever else. I had the greatest time, no matter what chaos was there. It was just a lovely time. Now, where can anybody – is this book released, and where can we get that? Where can we get this book?
It just came out on the 13th, and in 1 day or 2 days, became the number one Beatle book sold on Amazon.
Fabulous.
Oh, that's
so
great. Congratulations. It's fabulous.
Amazon.com is the best place to get it right now. It's easiest. I don't do a lot of social media. I do Facebook, and that's just about it. And Amazon's been a real good place to get it. And they've got this great price on now. It's like $10 off.
We'll be telling everybody out there to be buying this. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
This will be great for all the Beatles fans out there. It definitely
the expression goes, when they say talk about a great read, your book is it. There were only really very few people who were truly in, like the inside inner circle. And you, an American, were one of the very, very few of that. And so also what's beautiful about it and all of the things that you've done with this is it comes really from a place of the magic and the love. It's not a cheap kind of a tell-all thing. There was a trust and a bond, and this is really so many years after the fact of just something of interest and something wonderful. So everybody should get it and read it.
Well, thank you, Evie, because you just nailed my intention with the book. So thank you. I appreciate that you got it, So that's great.
Well, I think, you set a lot of stories straight. I think the idea that everybody who was curious about the what it was like on the rooftop, it's a great read. I mean, with all the people, just the excitement, you could feel like you're there with the band, with the boys.
That was
and
the idea.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think Evie, you being a musician and Ken, you being a producer and being there and myself as being, we were at a place where I think the 70s had the most magical time in history as far as music was concerned. It was just that magical moment of everybody coming in and out. And camaraderie. There was a camaraderie in there that you don't get in this day. I don't get it. I don't feel it as I felt back then. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the
I would just like our everybody listening, I would just very, very quickly, for people who don't know, just about you, Ken, is that you have a very interesting arc as a, in your work and career, having started out as a musician and an artist and a songwriter, and then kind of morphing into, if you will, the suit world, and albeit the perfect place.
That's true.
The perfect place in time, of course, as we've been talking about, magical with the Beatles at the heart of all of that, and then continuing in a way, getting back into the creative part of music by getting back full force into being a very successful record producer and producing all kinds of fantastic music with also wonderful, wonderful artists. You mentioned earlier about Waylon Jennings, of course, his wife, Jessie Coulter. Did you do the I'm Not Lisa? Were you involved in that?
Yes, I did.
Was that 75 on Capitol?
That was, and that was my first number one record. And then I got a number one record with Waylon right around the same time, so we were riding on top of the world.
And that was the forefront of that whole outlaw, country outlaw thing. So just quickly, because we could talk with you for hours about all of the, like, the arc of all the things that you've done, but I just wanted, for some of the listeners who don't know, I mean, just the sort of the specter of everything, like where you've been and what you've done, it's really wonderful. And then, of course, we're focused on this wonderful new book and, of course, the magical time that you had, the unique experience of being there, right there, and friends. And so it's great. Again,
it
everybody
is.
Should
and
read the book.
Yeah, I was the man in the white coat.
and not a doctor. Usually the man in the white coat is a doctor.
No. Yeah, I couldn't save that crew.
you cross from one side to the other, and then being with one of the most prolific groups in the world, of our what was it, our century, about it.
That's right.
I don't see another band, not in my lifetime anyway, that will be like the Beatles. But it is scary when I hear somebody say, "I've never heard of the Beatles." It is now the scary part when I hear those young kids say it to me. And I go, okay. And, you have to think, there's nothing I can say after that. But they,
That's right.
It's amazing because they were so prolific. And when I saw Paul last year, and the man is still going. Ringo's still going, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
the music just lives on. I mean, the music just lives on. And that rooftop, people remember it so well. And that includes Billy Preston, who was one of the few people that actually also played, at the rooftop. Yeah. So it was great.
And also, what's so great that you did this book is, sadly, so many of that little group of you who were there are not with us anymore in this world. So
I
know.
It's a tragedy. I mean, we all experience in our lives with friends and family and colleagues, and so to document this from a place of love and exactly what you've done, it's great.
Yeah, I list the people that passed on since then, and then Jeff Emmerich passed away after the book came out.
Oh,
done, so.
Yes, not long ago,
It was horrible when I heard about it. I mean, I just saw him a few months earlier. So it was, and I had just...
We were supposed to meet in New Jersey last week, and it was all scheduled, and then he passed away.
Yes, and I had posted it, and I also got a reaction right from Jack Oliver, who couldn't believe it as well.
Yeah.
So it was just like, when I heard it, it was just so...
Yeah.
To me, I was talking to Chris O'Dell about this, because there's not many of us from that time period that actually worked with the guys, been with the guys, and was on the inside. And there's only a few of us left, doing Tony Bramwell, Jack Oliver. I've seen a few, Chris and myself and yourself. And I'm trying to think who else is a couple of the guys that worked there. But, here's a funny bit. Piers Plaskett was a guy that worked at the Apple Studios downstairs, you know, in 1975. Uh-huh. I remember I was over in London, and I was at the Apple offices. And he then left shortly after, and he came to New York. He had married, and he is now, I think, what is he? He's CEO of or something like that. He's got a high position for Solid State Logic, SSL.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's one of the guys. He's one of the top guys over at the Solid State Logic, and I was so thrilled to know that he had worked his way up to that and working on the boards and knowing what's going on. And, you know, it's amazing where everybody is, you know, that is still around. So he's done well for himself.
I really appreciate the plug on my book and getting together with you again, Evie, meeting you. It was nice today.
Yes, it's lovely because, I mean, I know who you are. We have, I'm sure, many mutual friends through the years and passed, you know, through things, but never had the pleasure of meeting you then or us working together. But this is really lovely. Yeah, it's great to talk with you.
Oh, good.
Thank you. Well, many more from you. I'm sure we're going to find more books from you. And,
and let's
we'll do it
say
again.
You have already
absolutely.
You are prolific in that you have already written several prior to this.
Seven.
Yes?
Seven books, yeah.
Seven books?
Seven.
Pretty great.
Yeah, I think I'm out of words.
And author.
Yeah.
I think I've used
absolutely.
Up all my words.
Well,
okay.
Listen, thank you for coming on. And
you
know what? Come back when, you know, anytime. Just come back anytime.
Okay.
And everyone out there, pick it up on Amazon. The Rooftop Concerts. The Roof, it's called.
The Roof.
Thank you.
The Beatles' Final
Roof,
Concert.
The Beatles' Final Concert. And
concert.
You can't miss
right.
it because the cover is an iconic shot of the guys, the band, and there you are, as you say, the man in the white coat. So
absolutely.
Very easy.
All right. That's a great title.
It's a beautiful cover.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you
very much, Ken.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Sweet.
Oh, it's great. Great.
Yeah.
I'm so looking forward to reading this book.
Yes. I mean, that also takes away a lot of the rumors, you know?
Yes.
Because there's so many rumors of who was there, what was there, not happening, this was, you know. And
that's it.
That's great.
That's the man, one of the few people who was there and who's here to tell the story, and that's
exactly.
There you go. That's the truth.
That's where it's done. And so, you know what? It's good. And like I said, the place was only a size of a postage stamp on that rooftop.
Mm.
And seriously, they really tried. The building was condemned after one of the parties. It
right.
was so
weird. So you rest your case. I mean, all these people who, you know, it's funny. It's like there are so many things in life, right? Whether it's the most famous kind of a sporting event or a certain concert or like this. And after the fact, if they say, well, you know, the capacity was 100 people, and then you listen and like 500,000 people tell you they were there. So in a smaller way, it's like this with the rooftop concert. And the fact is, it's not possible, as you said, and we now know, we talked to Ken.
Well, you know, it's so true because a friend of mine pointed that out when they were always talking about, you know, the lost weekend, the lost years, you know, John's lost years, and everybody
mm-hmm.
said they were there. And I kept saying, and as one of my friends would say to me, and he goes, boy, it seems like the world seemed to have been in your backyard constantly. They're all
right.
saying they were there. And I said, I know. And they seem to be all in my house, and I don't know who these people are. So,
yeah, somehow
you
never knew they were there in your house.
They didn't know they were in existence, and I can't even tell you how many people have said that to me, and I just sort of look at them. I'm going, when did this happen? You know, in my head I'm thinking, when I even sometimes go to when Chris O'Dell and I speak, and I go, Chris, do you remember that? They said, no, who's that? I said, well, I was going to ask you. You know, so we're always talking to each other because she was there with me, so I know. And it's like, I can't tell you how many, and it's terrible how many people actually say it. And you just sort of look at them going, well, if you were there, how come I don't remember you? Well, give me an instance. And they don't, everything is it's what they read, and nothing specific, you know?
That's right. It's just, it's all very vague and just common stuff that's out there. It's,
yes.
Yeah, it's not true. And, you know, it's sad that there are people who need to do something like that, or even worse, people who, I guess, try to make a profit on stuff that's just all phony and made up about things
absolutely.
That didn't happen or never happened. But, I mean, there are worse things in the world, I guess, but the truth
usually
outs
from
at some point.
Right. Yeah, it does take away. I was going to say, so now what are you up to?
Well, let's see.
Besides the holidays.
So I've been busy writing, and I'm going to be doing it's sort of a live with me and the band are going to be doing a live set on this radio show, the folk scene. It's called Folk Scene, although it's really, it started out, this show has been on the air since about 1970, which was great. It was sort of the famous Howard and Roz Larman were hosts forever and ever and ever, and sadly, I mean, they've passed on, and their son, Alan Larman, took over, I mean, some years ago, and so it's a bunch of also really contemporary music, and so I'm going to be doing this, you know, kind of a live set, interview and a live set with the band, I think something like in 2 weeks, but I, even though we're going to record it live, I don't think it's going to be live as we do it. I think it will then be broadcast according to whenever the schedule on their
right.
on the air
and whatever
schedule
they've had
happens.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're excited. I'm probably going to debut literally a brand new song that I'm just make sure I have all the lyrics straight in my head. You know, just sort of like hot out of the oven. So that, and then gearing up for stuff into, of course, next year, like tour and new album and a lot of good stuff. So really excited, just excited
now
about stuff.
That's terrific. I mean, listen, I understand that. I mean, I can't believe how fast this year has gone by. Especially once, I always said, once Labor Day hit, I knew
mm-hmm.
that the rest of the year was gone. I mean, it was just flying. And I had attended
well, and then
two
your
weddings.
Birthday. Once
I know it was my
birthday
party.
October,
I had also
that's it.
Yeah, I did also the chill. I did Chiller Fest. You know, the Chiller Convention, which is an autograph convention.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And we were, and this was, I had done it the same weekend as my birthday party. Talk about putting pressure on myself. But what was terrible was, here you do, you know, it's always a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and I knew that I was leaving early on Sunday to because of the traffic around here. You can't get back into the city because I was in Jersey to get back into the city to make sure I get in time for the party.
Oh, my.
Let me tell you, I knew a friend. I know a friend who actually left the convention after me, obviously, and he couldn't – there was no way he could even get into the city. There was – so I knew that if I didn't leave at the time, I would never have made it to my own party. He never made it to my party. That's he said it was the wait, and he kept trying every which way to get over there, and there was no way to get over the bridge. So I started
I have
to laugh.
I have to say, what you did doing that was a very bold and dangerous chance that you took. I'm glad that
that's
you made
what
it
I knew.
To your party.
I, you know. I knew that if I didn't do it, it was not going to happen. So I'm also I was with this friend of mine, and you know, and we were talking about it. We got to get back out. We got to do this, and luckily I did, and I got back in time. But here the day before, which Saturday is always the big day, you know, and it
mm-hmm.
turns out that all of a sudden this guy comes in screaming into our room, said everybody's got to leave. Turns out we had a gas leak in the building.
Oh,
so we
no.
were, everybody was leaving, and we had to leave everything there. All ran out. And not only was there a gas leak, now we have a suspicious package that was in there. So we had a bomb threat as well.
Oh, my God. That's
so
scary.
And it was freezing cold because it had just rained, and it was that freezing rain. And there standing in the driveway are all the guests of the hotel and everybody that was at the convention. You could see Robert Wagner, Barbara Eden. You know, everybody's standing everybody's standing out there. And we all, I think we were out of the place for about four and a half hours. And,
that's
so we all went somewhere
else. Very scary.
I know.
There you are, one minute everything is fine, and the next minute it's just hectic and crazy.
Yeah. Your world is turned inside out. So it was quite an adventure that weekend for me.
I'll say. At least it ended with a bang, like great music and party and all your friends. And
absolutely.
Those,
but it was just one of those.
There.
Those who could get there. And then, of course, then right after that, after my party, was then, as I said, the fundraiser for the Rockers on Broadway. And what was great was there were auction items on the night of. And a friend of mine, I asked him, and he got some stuff from Rare Things that from Beyonce, because that's, you know, from The Office. And got some great a Lemonade album that was done in limited form, or there were things there. And also I got a box set that's coming out. It's from McCartney's Egypt Station. And I got to get, in fact, you reminded me that I have to get the name, because he will personalize it to the person who won.
Yes, you have to get that together. What kind of, do you have any big plans or just quiet plans for Thanksgiving?
Well, it would be with my my daughter and her roommates, and one of them is a pastry chef, a chef, and he'll do all the cooking, which I'm happy about that I don't have to do.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, I don't have to do it. And you know, we have friends over there's about, I guess there'll be about 15 or so people in the city, and we're all going to be going, and it'll be fun. And then after that, this week I'm going to see Kirsten Maxwell. She's amazing. She sang at my party, and
at your
party. She was great. And in January, I believe there was a date for the other singer and jazz player, Grace Kelly. Who's a Korean sax player. And the first time I heard the name, I'm thinking, Grace Kelly. I'm thinking of the actress. Yeah, but she's fabulous. If anybody, they can look online. I mean, on both these ladies, they're fabulous. They are fabulous.
Fantastic.
So then it takes us not far from, and the Councils are going to be in town here soon, too, in December. The Councils.
Oh, so yeah, I'm sure you'll be seeing them, of course.
They're fabulous. So
love
to see
and
them.
Friends and all that good stuff. Yeah,
yeah.
And they're great.
Yeah, and then it's the holidays, and that'll be it.
Oh boy!
And
and it's going to come even faster. Just breakneck speed for everyone. Everyone listening. It's shopping and friends and family and all kinds of good stuff. But we want to wish everyone in advance have a really happy and lovely Thanksgiving with friends and family,
and, you know,
or just quiet chill on your own, whatever it is.
Right, and you know what? I want to say, you know, thoughts and prayers, and I know I wish I could do more or donate people out there to help the people out in California that have just lost everything.
It happens all the time, I mean, cyclically.
But this one was
just
so bad.
Just been just absolutely devastating.
I can't believe that a whole
town. The shooting, and then the next day
gone.
The fire started, and then obviously the fire is just tragic up north. And then personally, there's been some just really sad passings of just truly wonderful people, lights in the world, and just leaving this world so, so young.
I'm gonna say we could leave on a good note. Today they renamed one of our post office to the Tuskegee Airmen. They were the unit that.
Oh wait, you mean locally near you?
One guy was part of that unit. And they renamed it in Harlem. They renamed that post office for them.
Oh,
so it's great.
That's
and
long,
he's 101 years old.
that's long overdue. That's fantastic.
And he was so sprite, you know, and spry, and I'm so glad. I am just so glad.
I'm glad they're getting recognized,
and that is great. So anyway, I'm going to sign off, and I want to wish you and everyone out there a happy holiday.
Oh, thank you, and me to you. Happy holiday to you, and likewise, everyone. Happy holiday, and yay!
Yes.
And again, that book, get that book, The Beatles.
Absolutely,
the
Ken Mansfield's
concert,
book.
Ken Mansfield.
That's right, and they'll answer a lot of questions we've probably been wanting to know.
Right.
So take care, everyone. Thank you, Evie. Thank you for being
my
guest host, and speak to you soon.
Definitely.
Okay.
Look forward to it.
Okay. Bye, everyone.